Welcome, all you artists and art lovers out there. Today, you are listening to the Artsville USA podcast coming to you from Asheville, North Carolina. I'm your host, Louise Glickman. I'm inviting you to hear from a very special friend and colleague today, Scott Doc Varn. And you're going to learn about a fascinating organization, PAPA, Preserving a Picturesque America. And this unique organization combines history with art with the purpose of conserving America's most important sites. So it's a fascinating story. And after our music from our arterial friend and colleague Dan Ubick at Blue Danube Productions and the Conduit Music Podcast, we'll get right to the interview.
Artsville, Artsville, the happening town where art abounds. Artsville, Artsville, from Asheville town where art abounds. Artsville, Artsville, feeling mountain high and inspiring North Carolina. That's where you'll find us, amazing artists and designers. Oh yeah, Artsville, from Asheville.
Louise here, and I'm right back with you as your host at Artsville USA, where we celebrate American contemporary arts and craft from Asheville, North Carolina, and beyond. We do our podcast monthly to introduce you to world-class movers and makers, their art, their craft, and we introduce you to some truly unique careers. You can find out more at our Artsville USA website, and this podcast can also be accessed from our website as well as any major podcast channels. We want to give you a little news about some growth and updates at Artsville starting in 2024. So you already know that Artsville serves artists in Western North Carolina, where we are especially known for our world-renowned arts and particularly craft here in the Blue Ridge Mountains. We direct both your eyes, your ears, and in discussion groups to meet our artists. You can meet them online currently if you go to our virtual gallery of artists on our website. You can go directly to their websites and buy from them, talk to them. All the specifics that you may need for shipping is all handled directly with the artist and without commission. Our goal is for them to use that savings to reinvest in building strong art businesses. Beyond that, we now invite you to come visit them in their studios. We have partner Sherry Masters from Art Connection here. She's an arts insider, and we will actually customize a trip for you. So if you want to see glass, maybe you've come for the Chihuly exhibit that is currently at the Biltmore Estate, we can create trips to special crafts makers who practice amazing glass talent here in the mountains. You all may not know that Chihuly was actually first trained in glass here at the Penland School in our region. So it can be glass, it can be paper, textile, painting, watercolor, anything that you like, and we will make a beautiful tour for you, half day or full day. So you can contact Sherry direct at Art Connections, or you may contact us at artsvilleusa.com. So now we're going to get into the meat of the matter with my friend Doc, and I'd like you to close your eyes for just a minute out there and imagine you have discovered a book, a weighty leather-bound book, and it's filled with the adventures of writers, poets, artists. So with Papa preserving a picturesque America, you can be part of the next chapter, which is conserving these historic landmarks with art. As you meet and learn from Doc, after our music intro from Dan Ubik at Dan Ubik Productions, he will open up an exciting new world for you, where art, history, preservation, and conservation all work together to preserve America. In ways of background about Papa, in 1872, artists and writers went throughout America in search of this country's most amazing historic and natural landmarks. Today, 150 years or more later, Doc has brought artists and conservationists together to show how these sites and attractions look now. The goal, of course, is to protect these special places through the power of art. Doc is an artist himself, and I'm not quite sure how he came to the brilliance of this program, but I'm going to let him talk to you about it. Doc, how did this all begin?
I'm flattered. You've done such a great intro on that. You've really hit the important parts. And a lot of this came to me almost magically. I feel like it was something that was going to happen, and I just happened to be the one fortunate enough to be able to embrace it and share it with others. So how did we actually come upon the book itself? Is that what you mean?
Yes. I mean, you know, I know that you have this book. I know there's one at the Vanderbilt Library at the Biltmore Estate, but it is a remarkable masterpiece, and perhaps you can talk about how that happened in the prints that are in the original book.
Well, it came together right after the Civil War, and so this is during Reconstruction, where things were terrible for so many people, and the recovery was slow and painful. But they were also just trying to build the dynamic of how they were going to reconcile all of these differences. The bloodiest war ever on American soil, and let's not focus on that, was kind of the conversation that all of these publishers had. Now, the publisher was not truly 100% benevolent. They were looking, obviously, to sell something. But when you get artists involved, things change a bit, you know. So they hired wonderful writers and wonderful poets and these amazing artists that were willing to go almost anywhere to discover the most beautiful places in America. So they started talking about not so much what we disagreed on, but one thing that we could agree on. And that one thing that we could all cherish and connect with was the natural beauty of this country.
I kind of feel like maybe we're replicating that period a little bit right now. And
it happens often, yes.
Well, I think you and I have been both motivated by what I call creative glue. Mm. So what is something that we can all agree on? And in many cases, it's creativity, art, the beauty of a landscape, a starry night. And that is key right now to making people feel better.
I agree 100%. When I'm doing speaking engagements, very often, I know everybody there is coming from different political landscapes, but when they leave, they feel better. They feel empowered, and they're excited to actually do something. And I happen to know that that room is full of Republicans, Democrats, and moderates.
Yeah. Well, you live kind of outside of Asheville, and I, you know, you've got neighbors, as I do, where we live, of all backgrounds. And the idea is coming together, community, through something important. And in this case, it's conservation, preservation, and art. So, first of all, where did you find the book? I mean, how did you kind of start with this book? And I guess your passion as an artist and a preservationist.
Well, this ignited what was already bouncing around in my head and in my heart and my soul so much. I am also a scoutmaster. I work with conservationists all the time. I'm trying to make a difference wherever I can, but I didn't really have a specific mission per se. And a lot of this started with my son, you know, where I'm trying to inspire him and, you know, my daughter as well, say, okay, you know, you should be good stewards of this. And they say, well, what do you do, Daddy? And I'm like, oh, calling me out. And so I kept my heart and my soul open for something. And this, like I say, essentially found me. So to go back more specifically to your question, I was just looking out there for new engravings, the great masters that could inspire me to get back to my woodcuts, because I've been continuing my watercolor, but we all get caught up in life. And I was pulling away from the heart and soul of, you know, the art that I used to do. So I wanted to bring it back. So I said, what better than to find a fine artist? And the piece of art that I found was from Lover's Leap, a place in Hot Springs, North Carolina. And I said, I know that spot. I paddle right past it. I know where that is. Maybe it's the same place that they're talking about in this book. And so I got the engraving, finally came to me. But that's when things shifted, because I didn't realize it wasn't just an engraving. It was cut out of a book. But I didn't know what book. This is a complete ignorance at this time. So I turn the page over and I read at the top, Picturesque America. Had no idea what that was. Meant nothing to me. But the words certainly did, because in those words, they talked about how unspoiled Western North Carolina was. And these were writers from New York. And so they've never seen this much unspoiled wilderness. This is before some of the serious logging, or even before the railroad had come to Western North Carolina. So I had to dig deeper. And I found a full set of books here in Asheville at the Captain's Bookshelf, a rare bookstore. These people are wonderful. And unfortunately, the store is not open anymore due to, you know, so many challenges that we've had recently. But they were kind enough to let me poke in there and research a little bit more. And then eventually they gave me a wonderful discount to say, yes, you need to just take this home.
So my understanding is this book, when it first started, was a bunch of singular publications.
Absolutely.
That were then combined into maybe two volumes.
That's right.
And I don't know when you started this organization. Was it before you could go to a website to do the research?
It was about 15 years ago. So obviously, recently, the tools have gotten better to do the research. A lot less old-fashioned maps, a little more Google. But ultimately, the thing that helps us find all these locations more than anything is the individuals that live there and the historians that are taking care of their own backyard. That's one of the great things about the movement that's happened with PAPA is the engagement, not just with the local artists, but the historians, the conservationists there that want to take care of their own backyard.
Well, I've come to know you as an artist and a great networker, great at storytelling, but also a lover of antiques. So you live in Saluda, which is, I don't know, 45, 50 minutes from the middle of Asheville. I mean, how did you grow up? You're an outdoors person, you're a woodworker, your studio where you exhibit these prints and the contemporary adaptations through current artists are all beautifully hung. Where did all these skills come from? And when do you sit down?
No, I've always got hiking boots on. And I don't want to ever be too far from a trail and yet another adventure. And this has guided me that. But to answer your question more specifically, you know, how did I get to this stage was always embracing the natural world has led me on this path. And of course, being educated in the arts. I grew up in an arts family, constantly in theater, and of course, went to USC to get my art degree, so in fine arts. And I never wanted to get away from it, no matter what job I had. I actually used to work for software companies like Adobe in that early renaissance where no one wanted to go into computers and everything was done analog, because my typesetting goes all the way back to lead and wooden type. And then eventually, woo, it was photo typesetting. And then We have Adobe Illustrator, and it's a Macintosh, you know. So I was part of that flow, and the arts have always stuck with me, but I've always wanted it to tie back into my love of nature and to find something that would make a larger difference. And that's what Papa has given to me.
So tell our audience how the process works and how ultimately it raises money for conservation and preservation. But, you know, you start with the site, and this site could be in North Carolina, but now apparently other places in the country.
Absolutely.
And then where do you get the artists from, and do you go hiking to these sites? And just walk us through a day in the life of a plein air painter or artist and Papa.
So that is the joy of this entire process, is that we are following in the footsteps, sometimes the paddle strokes, but definitely the brush strokes of these early adventure artists, because how it starts is that we're really doing it in very similar ways to the way they did in the 1870s. And we've lost our connection with so much of the natural world in America, just as they were kind of discovering it for the first time. So I follow it in the similar steps that they did. But we open one of those serials, one of the chapters from Picturesque America, of which there are almost 1,000 pieces of artwork. But one at a time, we focus on a space, like, for instance, is in the Catskills in New York. There's a specific section just on that and around the Hudson River Valley. So we open this up and start researching with other historians and friends and volunteers and start looking at all the places that they would travel, putting those pin marks, you know, in the map, saying they were here, and digging a little deeper. So then our next step is to actually go on the adventure to find them. Sometimes we're going to go by horseback because it's too remote. Sometimes we'll be hiking for days in Yosemite because it's on the cloud's rest, and you don't just drive up that. There's places in Yosemite that you can drive to, but a lot of the ones that these artists went to, they're like, we're going to go further. We don't want the convenient spot. We want the most amazing spot we can possibly find, because they were sharing that with Americans that had no idea how vast or wonderful the natural wonders of the world were, and specifically America. So once we find all of those locations through sometimes weeks and weeks of adventures and times with historians and the kindness of park rangers, we had a wonderful ranger in Maine who took a week off just to help us find each and every spot. So this wonderful generosity that always warms my heart takes us to the very next step, is that sharing it with the artist. So then we start talking to various plein air groups and various artist guilds and say, you know what, if you'd like, you can join us and we'll guide you back to the exact same spot where Harry Finn or Thomas Moran or one of these amazing artists was 150 years ago. And that's a magic moment once you find those spots.
And what do they find in terms of desecration of sites, or, you know, forests that have been cut down, or blight? What do they find? So when the artists record what they see now versus what was in that book.
And that transition and that education is very important. So glad you asked that, because that eventually gets to what our goal is to show how things have changed in the last 150 years. Have we been good stewards, or we failed in our task? And so often, luckily, many of these places have turned into state or national parks, but others have not. When in Louisiana, it is very sad. I don't know how many times I cried in Louisiana for all the places that were lost. For instance, the oldest cypress forest in America, gone, absolutely gone. But in the original artwork, there was nothing but these giant cypress trees. And unfortunately, now that place is gone.
Well, I am from Louisiana, and so I am very familiar with exactly what you're talking about. When you read anything, I mean, even back to Evangeline, I also like to spend a lot of time in Nova Scotia. So that, of course, is where the Acadians came to Louisiana and where a lot of our French heritage hails from. The descriptions versus what you might see today gives you this sense of loss, but I've never had any way to actually see it. So what you're doing allows us to really look at what has happened.
Absolutely.
So then how do you find the artists? I mean, not every artist I know wants to hike 2 days to go paint trees or whatever.
Well, and each one kind of, in some ways, finds us. Once we open up through podcasts like this and the press and letting people know, I'm always amazed at the generosity and the artists that do show up. They tend to be the artists that care about the final product and less about their own ego. So we don't have to weed out artists that are just there for a painting, you know, that they want to be patted on the back for. This has given the artist an opportunity to protect their muse, especially if you're a plein air painter and you're inspired by these places. This is your opportunity to give something back to that.
So then you have to show it to people, right?
Right.
So where do you exhibit? How do people see this? How do they experience it through the print, the aligned, more contemporary version of it? Maybe it's watercolor, maybe it's paint. I guess it runs the gamut.
Yeah, all mediums are welcome.
Okay. And I mean, I saw some of this recently in your exhibit space, in your work studio area. What initially occurred to me is the difference in how they are translated.
Absolutely.
By different people, which is fascinating. So, for example, we're talking about doing a project with Papa that would be Artsville and us and the plein air painters here in Asheville. We have a historic site in our area of Candler. And between the time I invited you to come paint it, it's a clock tower that's very historic, and today, when I drove by, every piece of greenery around it has been taken out to build, I don't know what, I think probably warehousing spaces. So as I've been looking for sites for us to record this important structure to our community, they will have to be from afar. We're going to do the farmers market in our area. It just opened yesterday. They moved the site. I mean, this is a continual issue for you, I'm sure.
Absolutely. Well, we have to continue to document. And for instance, when we've been in a lot of these places, sometimes there's been good news too. Sometimes the forest has come back. For instance, it was decimated right during the Civil War because of logging. But now, sometimes there's 150 years of new growth. So we can't actually see the same view in Acadia, Maine than we did 150 years ago. There's nothing but a forest in between. So there are places that do give us hope as well. So that documentation of the old and the new is still important. And to point out what you're saying about the clock is sometimes that time is now. 150 years from now, people will be reflecting on our paintings of that clock tower and going, look how much it's changed. Or, we had a clock tower? I thought, how could we have taken that down? And they'll have that regret that will hopefully instill in them that historic preservation mindset.
Well, our community has gotten the developers to understand that we want that clock tower preserved. But I would be willing to bet there's nothing in their agreement with the developer to say what goes around it. So that's a whole nother story for another podcast, I'm afraid.
Yeah, that's a whole deep dive there. But all of those things come up for us. So that's one of the best things about our project is that it does ignite all of these different issues that do need to be addressed locally by that community and let the artist's voice come out in order to bring attention to it.
So how are you doing it? I mean, I know that, for example, you have a particular focus on the French Broad River region, which is our region. Could you explain to our audience, which is everywhere you can imagine in the world, what the French Broad River region is And how are you tackling this in terms of interpreting it in watercolor, paint, or what have you?
And good news is, like, you, there's all those mediums are open to the artist. But how we tackle it, how we figure it out is first, again, try to retrace their route. So luckily, we figured out that it was along what's called the Buncombe Turnpike, which followed the French Broad River. It was the main way to get through the mountains all the way from Charleston up to Greenville, Tennessee. So this was the route that came through Asheville, and it followed the French Broad. And that's why they ended up naming that particular chapter or serial the French Broad region. And it encompassed not only Asheville, but all the way down to Chimney Rock area and Lake Lure and up through Hot Springs to the border of Tennessee. So after we actually find that route and actually figure out where those artists were, that's when we share it with the new artist. We do all the legwork. We work really hard to find them, and then we just guide them to it. So we have a number of paint outs, painting events where plein air artists just get to show up. We guide them. We actually show them the original artwork, how it was 150 years ago. And they're constantly going, wait, that's changed. And that's, oh, there's a lot more forest here. Or, oh, my God, the erosion is terrible. Or, what the hell's that condo doing here? That's all, you know. And I have to tell them, like when I was in the Hudson River Valley, and there was a big bridge going across the Hudson. And they say, do we have to paint the bridge? I say, we paint it as it is, because that communication is very important. And just like they did 150 years ago, when they put that steam engine in there, that was the height of technology at the time. This bridge is our technology of the time. And in 150 years, when they have flying cars, they'll think it's cute that we had bridges instead of just going across them. You know, so you paint it as it is so that we can show then and now.
And then, so, I mean, the word is getting out, okay, about what you're doing. I mean, I'm listening to what you're doing here in our area and now in the Hudson River Valley, in Charleston, Chattanooga, places, Louisiana. I mean, places that are not that close to where we are in Western North Carolina. But now PBS is on to you. So I've watched the pilot, which may ultimately become a series based on what you're doing. They took a slightly different approach to it by kind of turning it into a treasure hunt. Mm-hmm. But in fact, it is a treasure hunt. I mean, I had no idea how exhaustive the search was to find the location and also the sighting that's in the book. So,
and that's just a small segment. That was just a few spots.
Well, we saw an area in Madison County near Mars Hill. And, of course, that was a very traditional site, Blue Ridge-type site. And I thought that was really interesting. And then you moved to Charleston, which is, since I come from New Orleans and a preservation background myself, that was more recognizable to me. What I liked very much about it is it was a rural location and an urban location. So I'd like to know more about how this all came about and also to encourage our audience to go to PBS streaming and you can find this and watch it for yourself. I was fascinated. But anyway, how did it come about? And tell us about the filming experience.
Well, I'm not unaccustomed to filming, luckily. I was double major, so I was in media arts as well. So for me, it was kind of a flashback. I was like, okay, this is like the good old days. And I've done documentary work. But it all happened because Alicia Albee, a local here to Western North Carolina and a wonderful filmmaker, she came to one of my presentations. You know, I do a lot of presentations for Sierra Club and others. But she came to one that we were doing specifically to kind of recruit new artists. And she was completely fascinated with it. And she's done so much amazing film work over the years, she saw its potential and started pitching it essentially to different people. And she found the perfect audience, which is PBS. And they loved its authenticity. They loved the fact that it's about the arts and it's then and now. And as you said, they focus quite a bit on the treasure hunt aspect of it, the real fun and joy of the discovery. But of course, we want everyone to know that it extends past that. We have to have an actual concrete solution out of this, because for years we've been working on this. For almost 15 years, we found over 312 sites so far out of 900 and something sites. And we realized very early on that it was very important to go beyond just the fun of the painting and the fun of the exploration. We have to make a difference. And so then getting all of these local conservation groups and other nonprofits that are the boots on the ground, the people actually helping. So I really hope that the PBS pilot, whether it becomes a series or not, a full series, that it brings awareness to what we do with Picturesque America.
Let's talk about, well, not only the legacy, but all of these organizations, individually or together, they all have one thing in common. They need money. Mm-hmm. So how do you convert this into support that way?
So good. I'm glad you asked that, because that's where the rubber meets the road at the end. We want to very much evangelize all of these groups that are in all the different segments, all these places where there's serials from Picturesque America, there are people that care about those locations. So we just have to find them and bring attention to them. We have a really wonderful story. People love the before and after. They love to see the artists doing it. If that brings attention to these groups, they're checking the E. coli levels in the French Broad River. If these are the ones that are going to put that forest in their conservation easement, they need to be known. So first, as we were talking about earlier, once we find the place and get the artists to it, then we have these grand shows. We're about to have one in Charleston coming up in July. So during that show, we have the original artwork from the 1800s and surrounded by that watercolor, that oil, that charcoal sketch, all of that beautiful artwork with different approaches by different artists. And then those pieces of artwork are for sale. Now, as an artist myself, I would never ask artists just to give us the artwork. So instead, the gallery fee that would normally go into the gallery's pocket goes specifically to the conservation groups to protect that place. So for instance, is here in the Western North Carolina area on the French Broad, Riverlink and Greenworks are two very, very powerful nonprofits, and they're just so wonderful, the work they do. Mountain True is another one. So we know they're measuring the E. coli levels. They're the ones that are doing the work. So they become the beneficiary of the sale for the profits of the artwork. And also, someone, heaven forbid, doesn't want to buy the artwork, they at least are aware of the right cause and they can donate directly to them and help them out to do the conservation work that's so necessary.
Well, Artsville wants to know how we can help. So we have started talking about you doing an exhibition with us, actually two, okay, one where we currently exhibit in Candler at the Ferguson YMCA, but we also have art talks there. So you'll have an opportunity to talk to, they have 3,000 members. So you'll have a chance to sit down and get some volunteers and artists, we hope, but also a larger exhibition based on trying to save neighborhoods and sites in our own specific area. So it's a cultural development, history, and economic development concept as a partnership. But we are in touch with hundreds of artists all the time. How can they get involved?
Well, the first thing they can do is go to our website, and then there's a place there they can become an artist member. We support the artists as much as we can through the media and publicizing the fact that these are artists that are going beyond just landscape artwork. They're the ones that are painting these places from the 1800s. And then we give them a kit. Essentially, they can go on their own time to these locations, or they can join us on one of the paintouts. So to get involved, they should first go to our website and become a member. And if we don't already have a chapter in their area, we will probably start one soon because, I mean, they just keep popping up. They're actually more than we can manage right now. But like, for instance, Colorado's got so many great places, and we're looking for a few volunteers in Colorado to make that happen, in the San Francisco area, and just everywhere, everywhere they went in the 1800s.
Well, it's fascinating what you've done. For those who are not artists but perhaps like to buy art, support conservation, or just see it, you know, get their toe in the water, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Where can they go for exhibits? Is there something that they can see online, or they've got to show up in person?
Well, you can see some of the artwork that's available for current shows. That'll be on our website as well. So when the Charleston show, which is our next show coming up in July, all the artwork will also be displayed on our website. But, you know, there's nothing like seeing it, of course, in person. But the thing is, this is a really, for any art collectors out there, this is one of the most important collections that you could ever build, because it's the before and after. And these artists are some of the most, I don't know how to, it just touches my heart. I almost get choked up every time, that they give so much beyond just the beauty of their painting.
Well, I have been to see them. I recently was able to come to your studio and exhibit space, and I was blown away not only by the talent of these artists, but the passion came through in the work.
Doesn't it?
And you know that this is more than another watercolor. This is a commitment. And I saw your love of history and antique things, antique, that wonderful printing press that you have in your office that you're still using from the mid-19th century. I mean, it was a fascinating story that you're telling here, Scott, and we really appreciate your being with us today. If there's anything you want to add, like maybe your web address or anything else, now's the time.
Yes, you can absolutely find us at preservationthroughart.org. O-R-G. It's a .org, not a .com. That's where most people miss us. But again, I'll repeat that. Preservation through art, no dashes, no anything, .org. That's the best place to find us.
Okay. Well, that is great. And what about the Instagram and Facebook and all that other jive?
Oh, yeah. They're out there as well. And they show lots of scenes from our PBS show, as well as all the artists out there on site. And it's a wonderful thing to behold, and I hope people dive in and see more.
I personally am going to suggest that right now, over the weekend, you try and stream this show. Is there any instruction about how to do that?
If you are a member of PBS Passport, then you can watch it 24/7. That's a service that they have, like Netflix or any of the other ones. It's one of the best bargains I've ever seen for streaming. It's like $5 or $6 a month, and you get all the other documentaries, get the great British shows, just basically the entire breadth of PBS content. And of course, you get our show, which is entitled America, the Land We Live In. So it's a little bit longer title. You know, we've talked a lot about Papa. We've talked a lot about picturesque America. But the show is named after the subtitle that was originally used for picturesque America, called The Land We Live In. And we thought that was very poetic and very important, that still, even today, there's gaps. We don't really fully understand the breadth and the beauty of the land that we live in.
Scott, Doc, thank you so very much for being with us today. I'm going to do a little closing to talk about our partners and our sponsors, and I look very much forward to being able to consider you a sponsor and a friend as we begin this great adventure together. So we want to do what we can do for this very important work that you're bringing to all of our attention. So thank you.
Thank you. I look forward to seeing you on the trail. We'll get you out there soon.
Okay. So in closing, you can see that Artsville really uniquely markets creativity to the world. We're a platform for the talents to focus on these very artists that Scott's talked about today, the ones that live in Western North Carolina, We want to show, sell, tell, talk about their work as we have here, but as we also do in discussion groups around the region and really in other cities as well. We are focused on providing business skills so that artists themselves can create income and make a living from their work. And so we train them through our virtual gallery of artists programs, various exhibits, and also training with people who really do a great job, such as Craft Your Commerce, which is a part of Mountain BizWorks out here. We've mentioned Sherry Masters at Art Connections, how you can contact her, and we will put a specialized tour together for you. We mentioned the YMCA, where we do exhibits and art talks, and actually we also provide workshops to them. Ken Katara, who's an incredible artist known all over the country and a fabulous educator who gives his time to help us train our artists in the simplest kinds of marketing, right down to how to write a press release. Wendy Newman, who recently did this incredible photography workshop for us, but also a well-known fashion designer, look her up. But most of all, to our parent company and mothership, Arterial Inc., and their version of Artsville called Not Real Art, which emanates from the West Coast. They are our partners in all things art and craft. So we hope you've gotten to know us as well as Doc and his wonderful efforts, that you will meet us and our community around the world at artsvilleusa.com. Please tag, share, and like us at Instagram and Facebook. Contact us at any time if you would like to get more involved. And we thank you for joining us today. We'll be back next month.
Thanks for listening to the Artsville Podcast. Please be sure to like this episode, write a review, and share it with your friends on social. Also, remember to subscribe so you get all of our new episodes. Artsville is produced by Crew West Studio in Los Angeles. Artsville is property of Arterial Incorporated, a 501c3 nonprofit arts organization on a mission to amplify art and artists in the world. Our theme music was created by Dan Ubick and his team at Dan Ube Productions. Artsville is recorded at Echo Mountain Recording, edited by We Edit Podcasts, and hosted by Captivate. Thanks again for listening to Artsville. We'll be back soon with another inspiring episode celebrating American contemporary arts and crafts from Asheville and beyond.
Artsville, Artsville, the happening town where art abounds. Artsville, Artsville, from Asheville town where art abounds. Artsville, Artsville, feeling mountain high and inspired in North Carolina. That's where you'll find us, amazing artists and designers.